taken in the king's bed, only to find that not by a long shot was she the only woman to have done so.
"You aren't spending your nights alone, my lord,"
she hissed, gaining both strength and courage with every word she pushed between her lips.
"You have plenty to keep you busy. The fairy as much as handed me your little black book. You definitely don't need me."
She felt a rush of pride when Caliban straightened before her, and for the first time since she'd met him, actually looked a little uncertain.
"What is it exactly?"
she demanded, leaning forward in momentum.
"Does a wisher make a really nice fey trophy wife or something? Do you just want to keep one of the only two wishers alive firmly under your thumb? Is that why you've been by my side this entire time? Is that why you came after me? Fear, power? What the hell is it?"
she demanded, yelling now.
"Why the hell do you care?"
The silence that rushed in after she finished speaking was all-encompassing, and 9 months pregnant with a huge host of unspoken things. Caliban stared at her for some time, and seconds stretched into veritable hours before he finally blinked, and his beautiful eyes narrowed. His tone was low with earnest, his voice soft, as he said,
"I care, Minerva, because, quite frankly,"
he swallowed hard, appearing for all the world almost human in that single moment,
"I never cared about any woman in any manner, depth or capacity, until the moment that I met you."
His words rocked through her, a rogue wave that knocked the breath from her lungs. It was the kind of thing she couldn't be sure she'd heard correctly. It took her a second to process, but when she did, its effects plowed through her, sucking away the vast majority of her anger to replace it with a mixture of stark confusion and unbridled hope. He seemed impossibly unsure for a moment, and in that dilemma of bewilderment, the world looked on. It held its collective breath as he raised his right hand to curl his fingers beneath her chin. The touch was so soft, she barely felt it. It was like holding your hand over a candle's flame, a gentle warmth that was sheer moments from getting burned. He moved in, tall and overwhelming, and what was left of her doubt slithered away, leaving her unshielded and defenseless before him.
"Despite the fact that you threw everything metal within a 100-foot radius at me, I cared instantly,"
he told her in that urgent whisper.
"You needn't have attacked me to see me defeated, Minerva. I would have knelt before you anyway. I was already fallen."
That silent shock spread, its long white fingers coursing through Minerva's veins, so that all she could do was stand paralyzed by the confession he was giving her. He brushed his thumb across her cheekbone to send electricity shooting down her spine. It crackled like white fire, bringing every one of her nerve endings to delicious life. He moved closer, and his power came with him, tightening around her like a silken vice.
"And if you think for a single moment that I'm going to allow the only woman I've ever cared for get away from me, then—"
he shook his head.
"You know very little about the Unseelie King, after all."
Time slowed and the silence stretched, punctuated only by the sound of her breathing, ragged and shallow. Stars swam in the corners of her vision. Her heart pounded a bruising rhythm against the inside of her ribs.
"So I'll ask you one final time, Minerva Tristane. What can I do to help you accept your place at my side?"
He was so close now. When he whispered this question, it brushed across her lips like a lover's caress. He glanced at those lips, so close to his own, and Minerva felt the world tilt beneath her. She licked them absently. The flames at the centers of Caliban's eyes leapt to life, as if doused with gasoline. They went from flickers to bonfires, and she could almost hear it. Whoosh.
I'm sorry,
she whispered, knowing she was the one making them burn, and wondering if it hurt as much as she felt it must. Caliban looked back up into her eyes, his gaze naught but a world on fire. She could feel the heat emanating from it.
You should be.
A single pulse passed before he firmly grasped her upper arms and shoved her onto the smooth wood wall behind her as his lips crashed down onto hers with terrible, desperate need. Minerva's world finally toppled over, and her senses went spinning off its edge as his hard body trapped her against the bookshelf's divider. She lost her balance, her legs gave out, and all reason went flying in every direction, like leaves in a gale-force wind. Caliban shoved his free hand through her hair, fisting it hard to send tingling pain through her while his mouth once more invaded hers. Every ounce of her was humming to delicious, wanton life when the king then snaked his arms around her waist and her feet left the ground. He was holding her up, clasping her to him with a grip that bordered on desperation. He kissed her as if she'd made him go mad, and the thought was fuel to a spark that had already been waiting, smoldering somewhere deep inside her. The burning from his gaze was searing her insides now, spreading like wildfire to the far reaches of her body. Her fingers were curled tight into the lapels of his suit coat, clutching at them in temporary insanity. She couldn't breathe, and she didn't want to. Her head felt light, her lips tortured. His grip crushed her, and he spun with them, carrying her as if she weighed nothing. A moment later, Minerva felt the cushion of a plush, soft surface beneath her. She didn't know where she was, and she couldn't have cared less. There were warning bells sounding somewhere in an unimportant distance. They were easy to ignore. The hand in her hair loosened its fierce grip to move to her throat, encircling her neck gently, but possessively, a clear sign of control. His thumb caressed her pulse for a moment before his fingers slid further down to wrap around the top of her shirt. He gripped it firmly, and Minerva felt his muscles tighten as he clearly prepared to rip the thin material off of her. She experienced a sudden flash of panic and tried to pull away in that fleeting instant, but Caliban broke the kiss instead to raise himself up on one arm. In that moment, she stared up into eyes like hell and lost her will completely. Whatever she'd thought of saying floated away like a curl of smoke that had once been her courage. Caliban smiled. It was a smile so perfectly profane, she understood then and there why he was called the Unholy King. She took a quick breath, perhaps to scream, or perhaps because she knew very well what was coming. But Caliban silenced any sound she might have otherwise made when he once more claimed her sore, swollen lips with his own, showing no reprieve, no tenderness in his demands, and tore the shirt from her body. Chapter 18. He was flooded with magic, had been drunk on it since Minerva had cast those release spells on the rubies. His eyes were burning, and the pain was filling his head with madness. But it was nothing compared to the insanity that Minerva had sent roiling through his bloodstream when she'd done no more than bite her lip. He'd only come to the library wanting to speak with her. He'd wanted to get everything out in the open, wipe the slate clean and start fresh. And then he'd walked in to find her standing near the window, her tall, slim form outlined by the waning light of the land beyond, and he'd seen her as she truly was, as his queen, regal and graceful, innocent and powerful. Whatever he'd originally planned took a quick back seat to the awakening sensations within him. She'd been bleeding, and she'd been angry with him. That anger surrounded her like an aura, red and jagged. He became wary, and his eyes lit up like warning beacons, but she was so lovely. An angel in blue jeans, her dove-white hair in perfectly unkempt locks that curled at her waist. He awakened in other ways, humming to life like an engine. The fairy had told her what her fey name meant. Caliban took the opening and seized it in an iron fist. In his mind, he willed her to accept it, to accept him, to take her place at his side. He cornered her in the library, like a massive cat stalking its prey, and in that single moment when it appeared she might actually let him into her existence, he found his control slipping. He stole the kiss he'd been yearning to steal from her for several painful days. Her anger flared around her. He felt it like whips of flame, batting at his outer defenses, struggling with his power with a near equal intensity. She pulled away. She defied him, and Caliban fought a losing battle with his need. Every ounce of his physical form begged him to seize what was rightfully his. He struggled internally with a fire that was consuming him. His head hurt, his eyes hurt, his body ached like mad. His palace responded to his needs, providing him the strongest alcohol in the Fey realms, and he downed it with vigor, commanding it to sink into his bloodstream and cool it off. But it didn't work. Nothing worked. And he sensed an oncoming war with Miniver that would rock the foundations of the Unseelie realm. He had to have her. Now. Even if that meant using his magic against his queen. He could spend the rest of his immortal life making it up to her. In that mad-with-lust moment, he didn't fucking care. So long as she gave in to him here, so long as she opened for him now, he could bloody well die tomorrow. But then she faced him with her fury, and in her righteous innocence the truth escaped those pouty, parted lips. Little by little, the mystery of her rage unwound itself before his eyes. She didn't like being told what to do, which was so very like a queen. But more significantly, she didn't like sharing the king's bed with other women. It was a realization that struck him like a ton of iron bricks. She was jealous. Perhaps she had no idea why he took so many women to bed. Maybe she was unaware that an unseelie fey regained his power in such a manner. It didn't matter, because the end result was that she hated sharing him. That was his ultimate undoing. She wanted him, and that was all that he had wanted from the very start. Her unwitting confession had a profound effect on Caliban. The power swimming through him roared to untamed life and flayed at his mind until his will lay subjugated and beaten. And before he realized what he was doing, he was confessing to her as well. Everything he was, all that he ever would be, every ounce of his simmering soul he poured out before her. He cared for her, and he had never cared for another woman before in all his very long life. Miniver at last quieted. He felt her magic go still and then retreat. Her anger rainbowed from red to blue. She quaked and trembled, and he moved in. Like a guiding star on a cold night, he locked onto the beckoning desire in her eyes. Before his studying gaze, the thin veil of her barely kept control dissipated to reveal to him the truth. The belied heat in her heart that burned so strong, it rivaled his own. Cal broke then, cracking in two and shattering before the woman he had barely met, but had known a lifetime. He claimed her lips a second time and became a slave to the building, aching passion in him that hurt too deeply and tortured like darkness. He tasted her in that darkness, drinking her in like a man dying but for the sustenance she alone could give him. He clasped her to him with arms of steel, desperate to feel her against him, then held her aloft as her exquisite body gave way beneath her. She melted into him, weakening beneath the onslaught of his power and control, and he lifted her, turning with her to a portal that he opened with no more than passing will. He took them into that portal, and it sped them through time and space to a location he had never before taken anyone. The portal closed behind him as he led Miniver to the ground, not once releasing her from his kiss. She went willingly, her hair brushing against his cheek as they descended, her body arching against his in natural yearning. Her warmth was a teasing promise that he was helpless to deny, and his hand moved down her body to the hem of her white shirt, his muscles tensing, preparing to rip it away. She hesitated beneath him suddenly, no doubt sensing what he was about to do. Her hands pushed at his chest, even as her fingers clutched at his clothes. But there was nothing a predator chased harder than prey that ran from him, and her sudden defiance acted only as a fuel for the conflagration already consuming him. He chuckled darkly against her lips before he broke their kiss and rose up, meeting her lust-filled gaze. She was as crazed as he was. He smiled in cruel victory. In one clean movement, he tore the fabric from her body and reclaimed her lips. She gasped into his mouth, and he swallowed the sound as his hands now spread across the smooth, bare flesh of her torso. She was small enough that his fingers spanned the width of her waist before they slid to the waistband of her jeans. He needed to feel more of her. The monster in him roared its desire to rip them from her body as well, but the material was rough and thick, and he knew better. He wrestled with his demons. With the rigid control he could scarcely believe he possessed, he braced one arm on the ground at her side and lifted himself up one final time, breaking the kiss once more. Minerva gasped beneath him, her chest rising and falling in quick succession as she sucked in rapid, shallow breaths. Her cheeks were flushed, as were the sensuous soft mounds of her breasts, where they rose temptingly above the thin lace of her delicate bra. He went still above her, his gaze a firebrand that blazed a trail of heated need across her skin as he took her in. The breath caught in his lungs and his throat tightened. Shimmering locks of platinum white were spread across the thick carpet of clover beneath her, its strands blessing the very ground they rested upon. Her indigo eyes were lit by a candle's flame of simmering blue at their centers, casting her heavy-lidded gaze into glowing contrast as she looked up at him from beneath long, thick lashes. Her swollen red lips were parted in earnest, beckoning further torment. Caliban's gut clenched, his body throbbed, and he made a pained, growling sound before he gave in to the madness, gripped the sides of her jeans, and tore the buttons from their casings. They popped and went flying, but Caliban didn't pause before he was yanking the top of her jeans down over the rise of her hips. She lifted herself for him, helping him to rid her of the barrier between them. Allowing his animal instinct to take over, Caliban shed his own clothing with harsh and ripping speed that destroyed most of it. Her heavy-lidded gaze stopped on the marks upon his flesh, and recognition flashed in her eyes. But he allowed her no time to dwell on the scars. For a split second later, he was looming over her once more like an untamed beast, his hungry mouth blazing a trail over her neck and collarbone, as his fingers pressed through her soft, blonde curls below, parting them and delving lower, following the beacon of her heat until he was gliding over the moist, ready entrance to her pulsing core. She made a small sound, vividly desperate, and arched against him, her body in control now, her mind having surrendered wholly to its needs. But he slowed there, threatening entrance, expertly teasing and slipping so easily across the slick evidence of her mounting desire. Caliban felt her arms encircle him. A second later he inhaled sharply as her fingernails found purchase in the muscles of his back. He chuckled low against her skin, tore away the flimsy material of her bra to expose her breasts, and clutched her right nipple between his teeth in warning. She gasped and cried out with a sudden sensation, but her nails continued to dig. Grinning to himself in dark triumph, Caliban gripped her throat with his free hand, clutching it gently but firmly, and clamped his mouth down over her breast, sucking hard before he bit down with just enough pressure to cause pain but not break the skin. Minerva screamed and bucked beneath him. He felt the flood of wetness coat his roving fingers between her swollen lips, welcoming him in spite of her cries. His cock throbbed relentlessly, hard as the iron that could kill him, opening up a mean streak in him. He didn't let up in his assault, shoving two of his fingers hard and deep inside her, and using his thumb to press with cruel precision on the hood of her clitoris. Minerva bucked and began thrashing against him, gritting her perfect white teeth in pain-filled ecstasy. She was so tight around him, so small and hot, his pulse raged, and he grimaced in his own special pain. But it was a good pain, promising a pleasure unlike any he'd ever known. He slowly released her tortured nipple and smiled again, the very devil himself. Then he proved his hellish intent by rising above her, a demon above a sacrifice, and pulled his skilled fingers from between her legs. She calmed a little, moaning in confused need, her head tossing to the side in a beautiful display of passion. He positioned himself at the entrance to her molten core, then used the hand around her throat to grip her chin and force her head still. He squeezed until she opened her firmly shut eyes. Minerva's breaths were broken in gasps, her tortured, perfect breasts rising and falling like temptation itself. But she looked up at him as he quietly commanded, and his gaze caught hers firmly in its burning trap. That was all he needed. It was all he was waiting for. With one powerful thrust, he breached the walls of her womanhood and plunged deep, deep inside. Now Minerva's scream echoed off the far reaches. Her head tossed back, her neck arched, and her body came up off the ground. He met her halfway, leaning into her, his torso against hers, his arms braced strong on either side. In control. In command. He remained there, lodged firmly inside where she gripped him like a vice, and time slowed down as he placed the most tender kiss in history upon her forehead. Another beat passed, and Caliban lowered his gaze. His eyes roared to fiery blazes, and he pulled back just enough to thrust powerfully back into his bride. She cried out again, a sound less harsh this time. But her legs bent, and her hands clutched, and her eyes were squeezed tightly shut against that tidal wave of agonized bliss. Suddenly, her nails released their death grip on his back to move up to his face, where they once more shoved through his thick black hair and grasped it hard. Caliban drove into her again, allowing her to pull him toward her so that he could find her lips again. This time he brushed against them softly. Deftly, a tenderness that was in complete opposition to the powerful force with which his body ploughed into hers over and over. She moved with him, like rain upon a stone, melting around him, malleable and open and pure. And he drank her in. He stole from her all that he'd ever wanted from anyone, that undeniable pleasure, that ultimate release. He took it from her as if it had always been his to take, and in doing so, as his pulse and pace quickened, and his heart pounded, and the world around them blurred into insignificance compared to the mounting heat within them, he gave the same to her. Minerva's legs wrapped completely around him now, her heels digging into his sides, as his fingers curled like claws into the ground on either side of her, and his pounding became furious. At last, every muscle in Minerva's long, lithe body flexed and held tight, and her head flew back as she wailed into the waiting space around them. Her body convulsed around his with her climax, sending Caliban into his own final frenzy. He raised his head, shut his eyes against the world, and bellowed in exquisite, terrible pain as he released his fire into his queen, searing her from the inside, claiming her absolutely and forever. In the midst of this heaven-hell, as he rode the highest peaks of passion in that blurred surrender only orgasms know, a single word whispered itself to him, precious and potent. It was her name, her true name. "God's help me," he thought. His senses thunderstruck and scattered. "It's so beautiful." It was perfect. Caliban slowly lowered his head as he floated down from that ragged ledge of impossible ecstasy. His body shuddered, spent and strange. He felt different now, as he never had before. He blinked his eyes open and gazed down at his queen. His heart did a flip in his chest and settled into an erratic rhythm. She gazed up at him as well, with blue-white heat, the hottest kind of fire of all, in flames that otherwise mirrored his own. Caliban felt his magic ebb and flow around them, mingling with hers like watercolors on a wet canvas. They were one in the truest sense now. He had absorbed her power, and she his. Her voice was scratchy from screaming, and she smiled winsomely as she cleared her throat and tried again. Her fingertips brushed a lock of his hair from his forehead. The gentlest touch.
I know your name,
she said hesitantly. He smiled as something filled his chest, something he didn't recognize but that he desperately wanted to keep feeling for the rest of his days.
And I yours.
She blinked, briefly shutting out that blue-white fire before her smile became hopeful and small, and the flames flickered lazily.
Keep it a secret?
She asked. That strange sensation that had been entering his chest suddenly exploded inside of him, expanding to the farthest reaches of his soul, filling up every shadow and replacing it with hope. He knew what it was now, and he knew he would die a thousand deaths at the hands of the most terrible evils before he let that feeling go. He would never let her name be heard aloud. It was his to protect forever.
Always.
Chapter 19. Lalura lifted her head from her knitting and sniffed the air of the bedroom of one of the guest suites in Roman D'Angelo's safe house. Then she smiled softly, set her knitting down on her knobby knee, and waved her right hand. The door across the room slammed shut, affording her instant privacy. It had closed just in time, as the air before her shimmered, turned blue and sparkly, and then parted, making room for a portal that resembled a long hallway. A child came down that hallway, skipping lightly. She was dressed exquisitely in a long, fine gown that shimmered just like the air. Her very long, very thick hair shimmered as well, in colors that resembled the ocean on a clear, blue day. Small, pointed ears delicately parted the locks of that hair, making the girl instantly recognizable, as if there had been any doubt. The beautiful girl reached the portal's opening and grabbed a hold of the sides to poke her head through as if it were an actual doorway.
"Is the coast clear?"
she asked softly, her voice tinkling like chimes. Lalura rolled her eyes.
"You know good and well it is."
The fairy grinned and stepped out of the portal 1 foot at a time, as if testing the water. Then she leapt clear of the portal. It slammed shut behind her with a zap of electric magic.
"It's good to see you, Lalura,"
the fairy said warmly, moving across the room like a ballerina.
"And you, Titania,"
Lalura replied easily. The fairy cocked her head to one side and narrowed her gaze.
"Though I must say, you've looked better."
Lalura laughed, and it was the sound of sand in a tomb.
"I can imagine you'd think so."
Titania blinked.
"You don't think you look horrible?"
Again Lalura laughed, this time more heartily. She set aside her knitting and slowly stood, leaning heavily on her cane as she did so.
"I never said that,"
she replied. As slowly as she'd risen, she made her way to the hutch across the room and turned on the teapot that was plugged in on top of it. Titania took the seat she'd vacated and curled her slim legs beneath her.
"Using an electric teapot, I never thought I'd see the day."
"That's the problem with you, Titania. You don't see most days. It's easy to ignore them when you have so many."
The sound of chimes tinkling filled the room as Titania giggled.
"Are you telling me I should step out and take human form, Lalura?"
"It might do you some good. Tea?
No, thank you.
Titania stood, leaping out of the chair to stand on her tiptoes for a moment, before she did a little twirl and began absently examining the room.
I know it's been a while, but I've come for good reason.
Lalura finished pouring her own cup of tea, added her milk, decided on a spoonful of honey as well, and then stirred.
I figured,
she said simply.
The Unseelie Queen has taken her throne.
I'm aware.
The old witch turned slowly, reached for her cane, and made her way back to the seat that Titania had temporarily stolen. Titania moved to the chair and knelt beside Lalura, draping her slim arms over the leather armrest.
Not much ever escaped you,
she said in her tinkling voice. Lalura said nothing, taking a sip of her tea instead. She closed her eyes as the warm, soothing liquid made its way down her throat to heat her up from the inside.
"Do you think you'll come back any time soon?"
Titania then asked, changing the subject.
"When it's time,"
replied Lalura.
"You do know that if you are still in this body when it takes its last breath, you'll be trapped in it forever."
"I'm aware."
She took another sip. Titania sighed, perhaps in frustration, perhaps in boredom. It was like that with her. She stood again and wandered aimlessly around the room, stopping before a snow globe that had a castle inside. She wound the musical key beneath the globe and turned it in her hand to watch the sparkling flakes swirl around the fake abode. A beautiful tune filled the room, and Lalura closed her eyes to listen. As if knowing she was enjoying the music, Titania waited until the music wound down before she spoke again.
"I heard you recently got engaged, almost married."
Lalura laughed now, but it was a harsh and dry laugh, nearly void of real humor.
"Time has no meaning to you, does it, Titania?"
"On the contrary," said the fairy defensively, "it simply has a different meaning to me."
"I'll say,"
huffed Lalura,
"I was engaged the better part of a century ago."
Titania was silent for a moment.
"I'm sorry,"
she said finally, and Lalura knew she was referring to Conrad's death, and not the bit about time and its meaning. Lalura swallowed hard as memories invaded her. Then, in the manner she'd perfected over the decades, she shoved the past away and nodded, just once, with finality.
"Thank you."
She took a deep breath, sipped her tea once more, and asked,
"Why did you come here?"
"The new queen is in danger."
"Tell me something I don't know."
"I came to you because I'm not certain who I can trust in the realms any longer. The threat feels close by, all around us."
Lalura considered the fairy's words. She pondered the situation in silence as her forefinger tapped thoughtfully on the leather of the plush love seat she inhabited. Titania went on, speaking to her over her shoulder as she perused the spines of several books on a shelf, and then leaned forward to examine a painting hanging on the wall.
"I'm not going to ask anything of you directly,"
she said, at last turning to face Lalura. Lalura caught her gaze and held it. It had been a very long time since she'd looked into luminous pink eyes. Perhaps the fairy was right. Perhaps it was growing time to return.
"But I know you care about the girl," said Titania. "And so does Caliban. If anything happens to her, the realm will fall, and like dominoes, the others will follow."
Still Lalura said nothing. Instead she nodded, and it was the slightest movement. But it was enough. Titania turned away, waving her hand to open a portal. The air shimmered, split, and the hallway appeared in that other dimension. Lalura knew now that it must be a corridor in Lord Caliban's castle. Titania moved more slowly toward the portal than she had moved away from it, almost as if she was reluctant to go. She grasped its edges and tentatively lifted one leg through. But before she followed it with the other, she paused and turned to pin Lalura with one final look.
"Don't wait too long. Just long enough."
Lalura didn't have to ponder the double meaning of the advice. She said nothing at all as the fairy, who looked like a child, but was the eldest of her kind, stepped through her portal and vanished down the long hall as it closed behind her. Chapter 20. In the twixt between the Seelie and the Unseelie realms, there were pockets of magic inaccessible to anyone but the most powerful Fae. One such bubble of power was so strong, Caliban alone had managed to breach its outer defenses to make his way inside. That had been long, long ago. This was his garden now, his and Miniver's. That's what he'd told her. Every bit of it, from the labyrinth-like hedges of rose blooms, to the beds of clover, to the trees forming canopies above them, now belonged to her as much as it did him. Miniver had rested in his arms, her body cushioned by the impossibly thick and colourful carpet of clover beneath her. The tiny green plants sported every colour of the rainbow, and every one of them was four-leafed. Above them stretched the long, sheltering limbs of the most beautiful tree Miniver had ever seen. Each branch possessed leaves like feathers, each feather leaf a different shade of pastel. Caliban had told her the tree was called an Adarian, named apparently after a legend about fallen angels. Its branches shielded the lovers from the Twixt's sunlight, which, unlike the neighbouring Seelie and Unseelie realms, was supplied by triple suns, red, yellow, and orange, so high above and far away. Beams of soft light were allowed in through small holes in the canopy to gently warm the ground below like the glow of candle flames. The garden was unbreachable. Here, Cal had promised her, she would always find solace if she desired it. Here she would always be safe. From everyone but him, that was. He'd added that last bit with a wicked smile. It appeared their lovemaking had somehow healed Caliban's wounds, and Miniver heaved a sigh of internal relief. She knew she'd given him those scars with the metal she'd thrown at him in the mortal realm. They were gone now. In turn, Caliban had repaired her clothes for her with a bit of that fey magic that curled around them like a pool of possibilities, and under much duress, he'd given in and taught her how to do it herself, which he certainly instantly regretted. "It's a sin to cover that body," he muttered to himself just loud enough for her to hear. But then he'd dressed himself as well, this time in blue jeans and a black T-shirt, and pulled her back into him so that she rested comfortably against his chest, her hair spilling across his torso, her ear pressed to his heart. She liked the way it sounded. Strong. Not far from the shelter of the Adarian tree, a small stream ran its trail through the lush display of perfect grasses, clover, and flowers. It was clear and cool, free from life that might muck it up. She'd even tasted it earlier, and now she rose from Cal's gentle grasp and sat up as she seriously considered bathing in it. She glanced back to find Caliban watching her with terrible intensity. His eyes were glittering. She blushed beneath his study of her and nervously tucked her hair behind her ears. She felt as if he could tell what she'd just been thinking. A part of her liked it. Feeling brazen in a way she had never felt before, she stood up, yanked her shirt over her head, and strode to the stream. There she stopped, tossed her hair back, and glanced over her bare shoulder at her lover. He'd risen as well, and now sat with his back against the tree, watching her intently. She curled her lips in a come-hither manner, and slowly, temptingly, unbuttoned the top button of her jeans. He shook his head as his eyes leapt to blazing life, and smiled a smile like a whiplash. 30 minutes later, Miniver was once more rising from the king's perfect, poisonous embrace, this time quite intent on lowering her now decidedly and deliciously sore body into that stream. She made her way to the stream and watched Caliban with a wary eye as he grinned in pure animal satisfaction and scheming design. Then she stepped into the water, and as she did, it warmed around her flesh. She closed her eyes and moaned. It was heating up like a hot tub. Miniver found herself turning slowly into it, sinking as if it was actually that, and closing her eyes as her body escaped into an entirely different kind of bliss. While she rested there, the water magically singing her every tune, she thought of the past few hours. She changed. She wasn't behaving like the Minerva she'd come to know.
"I sort of feel buzzed," she whispered to herself.
She'd only been drunk once in her life, and it had been a miserable enough experience that she'd learned her lesson the first time. But she'd been buzzed a few times, too, and this felt similar. She was uninhibited, free. A soft chuckle from the bank drew her attention. She opened her eyes.
"You'll get used to it," said Caliban.
He was devastating in nothing but jeans now, his raven hair tousled, his eyes glowing, his body sculpted as if out of stone. He relaxed once more against the trunk of the tree that had shaded them earlier, clearly enjoying the show she was giving him.
She gave him a curious look. "What do you mean?"
He went on.
"The buzzed feeling. We've exchanged magic."
He shrugged, flexing those sculpted muscles.
"Magic does things when unseelie fae have sex."
Minerva swallowed hard.
"Every time?"
she asked softly. Caliban lifted off the tree trunk, bent his knees, and draped his arms over them, narrowing his gaze slightly.
"Well, no, not every time. Only when necessary."
"Necessary?"
She was feeling an odd, cold sensation, despite the warmth of the water around her.
"It's the way the Unseelie recharge their magic. Sex for us is often an act of regeneration."
Minerva ran that over in her head and recognized where her unease was coming from. Caliban stood, coming to his bare feet with fluid grace. He sauntered to the stream's edge and knelt down, his movements like those of a large cat. He pinned her with a hard look.
"Minerva, if you're worried that I've used you to replenish my power, you must realize that you took my magic as well."
She blinked, then nodded. He smiled.
"And that when we made love, I was already on full, so to speak."
That was true. She'd given him loads of power by emptying out those rubies. So then what was troubling her?
"Then why did our magic do that?"
she asked, thinking of how it had leaked out of them and mingled.
"You said it only happened when necessary, but neither of us needed it."
His smile broadened, and he shook his head as if in wonder.
"I am not so sure you didn't need it, to be honest. But why it blended the way it did, it's as much a surprise to me as it is to you. You're my queen, Moonbeam. We were meant to be. It will always be different with us, most likely in more ways than we will ever discover."
That thought sent goosebumps over Minerva's flesh, and a flush into her cheeks. She lowered herself a little further into the water, and hid her gaze behind her lashes, as relief flooded through her. She thought of the other women he'd taken to his bed, whoever they were, and knowing that he might have had a perfectly innocent reason for doing so, insofar as an Unseelie could be innocent, was a load off her mind she hadn't realized was so heavy.
"Why didn't I know all of this magic and sex stuff already?"
she asked, softly but aloud, giving voice to the other thing that was bothering her. She was confused by the fact that she knew some things about the Fey Realms, but clearly not everything.
"My advisor, Drummer, seems to believe that it is because you are remembering things your mother told you, or that you overheard her speak of when you were a babe."
She looked up now, instantly rapt.
"How can that even be possible? Celine and I were babies when she left us."
"Fey are not like mortals, Minerva. We can do many things they cannot. Most likely your mother told you stories, or perhaps spoke with other Fey in your presence. You heard these things and you remember them. Your sister doesn't, because even among twins, Fey are unique. In that way, perhaps, we are somewhat similar to humans."
Minerva hugged herself and drifted a little, trying to remember her infancy. It was an impossible task, of course. No one could recall those first moments of their lives, except when she really tried. She could swear she heard music.
"She sang to me,"
she whispered, as the realization hit her like a Mack truck. It stole part of her breath, and she spoke very, very softly when she said,
"It's why I love music so much. My mother sang to me the stories of our people."
Caliban stood, and her gaze followed him up. He kept his eyes on hers as he unbuttoned his jeans, let them drop, and stepped out of them. She moved back a little when he lowered himself gracefully into the stream, but his arm reached out like lightning and snatched her back by her wrist. He pulled until she stumbled into him, then slid both arms around her so that she nestled contentedly against his chest, the warm water soothing them both.
"You are full of surprises, Moonbeam."
His fingers ran lazily through her hair, brushing them from her cheek and forehead.
"And your hair feels like spider's silk."
"Cal, what if I can't do this?"
He pulled back slightly, and she looked up at him. His eyes flashed, a look of soft wonder subjugating his features. He cupped her cheek gently.
"You already have," he told her. "You've accepted your place."
He shook his head, and his smile spread reassuringly.
"The rest will come as it needs to. Trust me."
"But how can you be so sure? I had never even been to your realm before you took me there, not that I remember anyway."
She supposed her birth mother had lived in one of the three Fey realms, and she doubted it had been the Goblin Kingdom. So it was technically possible she'd been in the Unseelie realm before. But she would have been a newborn, and hearing someone talk about a land was quite different than experiencing it firsthand.
"Anything I know about it feels like knowledge gained by skimming an encyclopedia. You may as well throw me into the ocean and ask me to be the Mermaid Queen. I can't take a position of monarchy over a land and people I know nothing about."
He was silent for a moment, his piercing eyes contemplative and searching. Suddenly his gaze hardened. He dropped his hand.
"Then I will show you."
Minerva frowned.
"Show me?"
Her voice sounded much smaller than she'd meant it to.
"If you really believe you can't be queen before you've had the grand tour, then so be it."
He raised his right hand and snapped his fingers. The sound echoed in her ears. Suddenly, Minerva was completely dry and completely clothed. She inhaled sharply and stared wide-eyed at Caliban. He was now dressed in incredible finery, from white gloves to vest to jacket to what looked like genuine gemstones encrusted over his broad shoulders. The material was a thick, luxurious brocade in silver and black, and suited him like a glove, formal wear fit for a king. In a kind of shock, Minerva stepped back, taking in their surroundings. They'd instantly transformed from the small, lush garden in the Twixt that she'd nicknamed her Wonderland to what looked like a ballroom or formal hall of some sort. The floor was marble, shot through with veins of multicolored gemstones and metals. Half a dozen thick white marble columns supported a ceiling several tall stories above. At the floor center wound an enormous spiral of beaded glass mosaic, featuring swirling designs that curled in toward the center of the room. Whatever room this was, it was gigantic, sumptuously decorated, and completely empty but for the two of them. She gave Caliban a bewildered look, which just made the bastard smile, and then she looked down at herself. Now she gasped again, stumbling backward some more. Her leather soles sounded out against the marble floor. Caliban caught her easily, his movement, as always, nearly so fast she could barely register it. His grip on her upper arm steadied her as he chuckled.
"This is the castle's great hall," he told her.
Minerva made a small sound, cleared her throat, and said,
"Okay."
Now she knew where she was, but she was really paying attention to her gown. It was exquisite, absolutely stunning. Minerva had never seen anything like it. Unlike Caliban's outfit, which was mainly black with silver trim and brocade, Minerva's was silver with black trim and brocade. They complemented one another to perfection.
"It's unbelievably beautiful,"
she breathed, touching the material of her dress in reverence, and feeling that the description was inadequate.
"Yes, it is,"
he agreed. She looked up to find him watching her with wonder in his eyes. Their centers were still flickering with fire, appearing as if they would never extinguish again.
"Will your eyes always burn?"
she asked.
"I'm afraid they will,"
he said, as he lifted a finger and ran it delicately across her bottom lip.
"As long as you are mine."
Chapter 21 The platform was called, simply, the Moving Floor, or Mover for short. The marble and glass bead floor, which spread the span of an oversized ballroom, literally possessed the ability to leave the ground and soar over the lands of the Unseelie Kingdom as if it were a helicopter or jet plane. When it did so, it had no walls and no obvious means by which to keep people from falling off its edges. It was only a marble floor, upon which rested the same marble pillars it possessed now, and whatever furniture and accoutrements were appropriate for the event. The Mover was as ancient as the castle it had been created for. When the Unseelie King wished to utilize it, he had but to cast the proper spell. That was what he had done tonight, shortly after bringing Minerva back to the Great Hall. He'd called a handful of people to him, given them a series of orders, and then pulled her to the side to set her down at a small round table for two. There he'd settled her with a firm gaze and told her that if she wanted a tour, he would damn well give her one. At least, that was about how he'd put it.
"I will show you the land and the people that you will be queen of, Minerva Tristane," he said calmly, but firmly, in that matter-of-fact way that brooked no argument and drove her a little insane. "I will show you things you never dreamed, and by the night's end you will wear your crown readily."
His voice lowered then, and his tone turned more serious.
"But I must warn you, Moonbeam, the Unseelie Fae are not like the Fae of my brother's realm. Selene was able to be forthcoming about what she was. You, on the other hand, will need to keep your abilities as a wisher to yourself. Until you wear your crown publicly, the Unseelie will otherwise see you in one of three ways. As a terrifying enemy to destroy, a terrible power to exploit, or as a precious prize to win at all costs. Most likely a combination of two or more of the three. My people are, after all, known for their manipulations."
The warning had seared through Minerva in a strange way. It had scared her, yes, but it had also forced her ire to rise, and she could actually feel those blue flames leap to life in her eyes now.
"I can handle myself,"
she said, the prospect of ruling over an entire nation that saw her as something akin to a powder keg or nuclear warhead, something to be fought over but feared, was admittedly unsettling. But life was unsettling. Caliban rose from his chair.
"Not that I for one moment doubt your capabilities, my queen,"
he said, as he placed his hands firmly on the table and leaned over until his face was inches from her own. She froze in that nearness, caught in another rogue wave of his fey power.
"But for the time being, let's not invite more trouble than necessary, agreed? Because if you unwittingly wreak ardent, lusty havoc, I promise you I will deal with the issue long before you do, and probably in a manner of which you will not approve."
It was a promise she absolutely believed then and there. It was sworn in the amethyst hardness of his eyes.
"And I would rather not bury too many of our citizens tonight."
He straightened to that full, imposing height and offered her his elbow.
"Shall we?"
In the minutes and hours that followed, it became clear to Minerva that the king intended to give her the most amazing tour of his land any Fae had ever been given. It made her feel guilty, but it also made her excited. After all, what she'd said was true. She didn't know this land, and she was being asked to rule it. Maybe this would be a very good thing. It would introduce her to the realm and the realm to her. Within the course of a single hour, several notable people had taken Caliban's orders and run with them. She'd been introduced to Thanarive Drummer, the Duwam advisor to the king, whose wife was apparently responsible for most of the delicious food that would be served during the engagement tour/party. She'd also been introduced to Pai, the fire elemental, whom she found so freaking adorable. If he hadn't been made of fire, she would have very much wanted to hold him. She'd also been introduced to Pai, the fire elemental, whom she found so freaking adorable. If it hadn't been made of fire, she would have very much wanted to hold him. Of course, it wasn't until after the little dancing flame had come and gone that Caliban informed her if she wanted to hold fire, she could do so quite easily. She was a fae, after all, and quite the powerful one at that. "Everything will come with practice, love," he told her with a promising smile. Titania, the fairy, had also taken orders from him, though she was quick to point out to him that she hadn't needed to, since she can already automatically tell what it is her master and mistress need. But before Caliban could retort with any kind of warning, she'd flipped her blue hair over her shoulder and called to her a score of other servants who were obviously her underlings. Moments later, they were scurrying in a dozen different directions, busy coordinating the biggest party the realm had ever known. The cooks were preparing. Magic spells were being cast. The mover was being decorated. And it didn't take long before Minerva all but forgot that someone out there somewhere wanted her dead. By the stroke of 13, the platform was completely ready for liftoff, in grand celebration of the formal engagement of the king and queen of the Unseelie realm. Since, as he put it, he was not yet prepared to let her out of his sight, Minerva remained more or less at his side during these preparations. She looked on silently, with eyes she knew were way too large for her face, but that she could do nothing about. What was being revealed to her were scenes from a fantasy. They were the kinds of things graphic designers dreamed of one day creating with CGI, but that technology had not yet grown sophisticated enough to sculpt. She was walking through a forming dream, watching objects of the imagination being brought to impossible life. Every now and then, she would look away from the mesmerizing displays, only to catch Caliban staring at her. Caught in the act, he would either shake his head in what looked like silent wonder, or he would lean over to place a kiss to her forehead, or he would reach out to take her hand and give it a squeeze. She'd known him a few days, but to Minerva, these were the actions of a couple that had known each other much, much longer, and they felt right. Every layer of glitz and glamour laid upon the next was more extravagant, more wondrous, and even more improbable, until the great hall smelled divinely of dozens of different forms of desserts, and fanciful footmen were ready to receive guests, and servants were lined up in their own finery, preparing to wait hand and foot on their royalty and the royal court. Hundreds of invitations had been automatically sent out to appear without delay in the homes of Unseelie Fae far and wide. At one point, someone in royal court clothing approached Caliban respectfully and informed him of a political matter that needed his attention. At the same time, Titania appeared before them and asked to borrow Minerva. Minerva smiled graciously, feeling as though she should allow Caliban to deal with whatever it was he needed to deal with alone. She nodded at the fairy and quickly followed her. As she left Caliban's side, she could feel his power tugging reluctantly at her. It was almost a physical thing, like a magnet or strong silk ropes. She could feel a heat behind her too, and she somehow recognized it as the king's stark irritation. Instinctively, she used a bit of her own magic to sever the hold of his power around her. Then she looked back at him over her shoulder, to find his eyes ablaze, and the corners of his lips turned up in challenge. There was a promise in that gaze. She shivered and turned away, noticing her mouth had gone dry.